Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 2nd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or in the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools that I've ever encountered. And these tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye, or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says start here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool that I've been using to great effect over 16-plus years to improve my relationships, management of my emotions, and essentially turn any negative emotional state I encounter into an infallible signal, part of the infallible guidance system that each of us is given. And we encourage people to do that. You can also go and download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file that you just click and download. You don't even need to be put on a mailing list. Print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. It's a deceptively simple, amazingly powerful tool that contains the core teaching that Michael Rice is calling the ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness. And it is also possible for you to download from that webpage a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the use of that tool. Some of those shows people have called in with powerful testimonials about how the use of that tool has improved their quality of life beyond what they would have imagined. Some of those episodes are people asking clarifying questions about the underlying principles. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we encourage people to do that soon and often, because when they do, it usually brings up comments or questions, and they can call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1, and that will let us know that you want to talk or make a comment or a question, and it makes it easier for us to have a show that meets your needs, that assists us in living into our intention to be of service with this show. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. This is the 92nd day of the year. And today's lesson reads, miracles are seen in light. Light and strength are one and the same thing. The idea for today is an extension of the previous one. You do not think of light in terms of strength and darkness in terms of weakness. This is because your idea of what seeing means is tied up with the body, its eyes and brain. Thus, you believe that you can change what you see by putting little bits of glass before your eyes. This is among the many magical beliefs that come from the conviction that you are a body and that the body's eyes can see. You also believe the body's brain can think. But if you understood the nature of thought, you could but laugh at this insane idea. It is as if you thought you held the match that lights the sun and gives it all its warmth, or that you held the world within your hand, securely bound until you let it go. Yet this is no more foolish than to believe the body's eyes can see and the brain can think. It is creation's strength in you that is the light in which you see. It is creation's mind with which you think. Creation's strength denies your weakness. It is your weakness that sees through the body's eyes, peering about in darkness, to behold the likeness of itself, the small, the weak, the sickly, and the dying, those in need, the helpless and afraid, the sad, the poor, the starving, and the joyless. These are seen through eyes that cannot see and cannot bless. Strength overlooks these things by seeing past appearances. It keeps its steady gaze upon the light that lies beyond them. Strength unites with light, of which it is part. It sees itself. It brings the light in which your true self appears. In darkness, you perceive a self that is not there. Strength is the truth about you. Weakness is an idol, falsely worshipped and adored, that strength may be dispelled and darkness may rule where creation appointed that there should be light. Strength comes from truth and shines with light its source has given it. Weakness reflects the darkness of its maker. It is sick and looks upon sickness, which is like itself. Truth is a savior and can only will for happiness and peace for everyone. It gives its strength to everyone who asks in limitless supply. It seeks that lack in anyone would be lack in all. It sees that lack in anyone would be lack in all. And so it gives its light that all may see and benefit as one. Light's strength is shared that it may bring to all the miracle in which they will unite in purpose and forgiveness and in love. Weakness, which looks in darkness, cannot see a purpose in forgiveness and love. It sees all others different from itself and nothing in the world that it would share. Weakness judges and condemns but does not love. In darkness, it remains to hide itself and dreams that it is strong and conquering. Weakness dreams of being strong and conquering. It dreams itself as a victor over limitations that but grow in the darkness to enormous size. Weakness fears and it attacks and hates itself, and darkness covers everything it sees, leaving its dreams as fearful as itself. No miracles are here, but only hate. Weakness separates itself from what it sees, while light and strength perceive themselves as one. The light of strength is not the light you see. It does not change and flicker and go out. It does not shift from night to day and back to darkness till the morning comes again. The light of strength is constant and as sure as love, forever glad to give itself away because it cannot but give to itself. No one can ask in vain to share its sight, and none who enters its abode can leave without a miracle before his eyes and strength and light abiding in his heart. The strength in you will offer you the light and guide your seeing so that you do not dwell on idle shadows that the body's eyes provide for self-deception. Strength and light unite in you, and where they meet, your true self stands ready to embrace you as its own. Such is the meeting place we try today to find and rest in, for the peace of creation is where yourself, your true self, you as the offspring of creation is now waiting to meet itself again and be as one. Let us give 20 minutes twice today to joining in this meeting. Let yourself be brought unto your true self. Its strength and will be the light in which the gift of sight is given to you. Leave then the dark little while today, a little while today, and we will practice seeing in the light, closing the body's eyes and asking truth to show us how to find the meeting place of self, the little self, and the true self, where light and strength are one. Morning and evening we will practice. After the morning meeting, we will use the day preparation for the time, and at night we will meet again in trust. Let us repeat as often as we can the idea for today and recognize that we are being introduced to true sight and led away from the darkness to the light where only miracles can be perceived. Today's lesson, miracles are seen in light, and light and strength are one and the same thing. Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 92, is titled, Look Past Appearances. She has a quote at the beginning of the chapter that reads, man's concept of his world, built on the experience of the five senses, is no longer adequate, and in many cases, no longer valid. Shafika Karagula. Pam writes, the planet you call home is spinning at a rate of roughly 930 miles an hour. It's orbiting the sun at an astonishing 66,486 miles per hour. But unless you just polished off a few pitchers of beer, you probably are not aware of any such movement. That's one tiny example of how we distort reality. Very early on, some say around birth, our minds establish a pattern of perception, and then to proceed to filter out everything else. In other words, we only experience the things that jibe or coincide or fit with our very limited perception. In the book E Squared, I mentioned the girl from the Philippines who said it was weeks, if not months, after arriving in the United States before she noticed that some Americans had red hair, including people she knew and dealt with on a regular basis. Red hair was inconsistent with what she had been conditioned to see and expect. And so, for months, she was subjectively blind to red hair. She saw it as a brunette of her culture. Our brains are designed to be efficient, not accurate. So we take the 400 billion bits of information that are offered each second, and we begin screening them down. We begin narrowing them down. I'll take that bit of information over there. Let's see, this one fits nicely with my ongoing soap opera about the opposite sex. And lesson 92 tells me all concepts and judgments, all things I take for granted, are distortions that true seeing only comes through light. It says, I'd roll over laughing if I really understood the mental derangement that passes for thought. When I see through my eyes, which basically report a carbon copy of my beliefs, I see weakness, lack, and division. But there is another way of seeing, through the strength of light. Today, I'm grateful that as I give up the hologram I see with my eyes, I begin to see the radiance, the brilliance, and the love that shows up in true light. Miracles are seen in light, and light and strength are one. So those are our lessons and comments for today. We have 43 minutes left. Plenty of time for a comment or question. Our call number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will put a question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. What's on your mind today? What would be of service or support to you today? 563-999-3581. Is this Tim Bingham?
It is. I am here.
Welcome,
again.
Sir. How are you today?
So-so. I have a general question about my reluctance to use worksheets. I find that, for example, today I did the worksheet about being afraid to go on the treadmill and reluctant to go on the treadmill. Again, I've done this topic multiple times, and my goal in doing it is that I want to go back to being a little boy and taken care of, and I don't want to have to observe myself as an adult. And then I cancel that goal, and what I end up with is the same sort of grungy feeling of a little boy out of sorts, not wanting to face the struggles of the world. And I don't know how to move out of that place. And I keep doing worksheets and coming to that same place of an unhappy little boy with facing parents who are more interested in themselves than in me.
Okay, let me ask you to clarify. What is the goal that you specified in that worksheet?
That I wanted to go back to being a little boy and being taken care of.
How did you get that goal from the worksheet where you're hesitating doing the treadmill in the morning? How did you get to that goal about little boy from here's the adult who wants to do the treadmill?
If I close my eyes and try to figure out why I'm reluctant to do the treadmill, that's what I come up with.
That's a problem right there. Notice the words that you just said. I close my eyes and I try to figure out. So now, right now, you're not doing the worksheet process. Now you're into figuring things out. And so that's going to bypass and sabotage the worksheet process.
So how else do I figure out what my goal is?
you don't figure out what the goal is. The goal is there. And you know, one of the things that might be instructive for you here is when I talk to people about and I introduce the worksheet process, I talk about the mental short version that I came up with to ease people into what many experience as a very complex 7-step worksheet process. And in that process, I say, anytime I notice that I don't like the feeling I'm having, so if you have anxiety or fear or upset or tension or resistance come up when you get up in the morning and you say, it's time for me to do the treadmill, if you have any negative emotional or physical response come up, step one in that 5-step worksheet says, or mental version says, I recognize I don't like what I'm feeling, and so I put an emotion word on it. I'm feeling fearful, I'm feeling resistance, I'm feeling hurt, confused, angry, sad, whatever it is. And then in that process, we understand that I will only ever experience an emotion if I first pour enough mental energy into the thought that's going to create that emotion within my energy system. So the second step is I identify what's the thought I'm using to create the emotion. And then once I come up with the thought and I think it will strengthen the emotion, and then I'll know, okay, I'm on the right track here. So now I've got the thought and the emotion that it's causing when I pour my mind energy into that thought. And then every time that happens, that thought that I'm using to create that negative emotion, it will contain a goal that is not getting met. So the goal is going to be right there, rooted in that thought. So I don't have to go searching for the goal. I don't have to figure out the goal. It's right there. So let's say that somebody lied to me, and I discovered that they told a bold-faced lie, and because of that lie, it potentially has a negative impact on my reputation. So I become aware of this, and then I become aware of the emotion of anger. So then I look at the thought that I'm using to create the anger. And I have a thought like, that person has no right to tell lies about me. Or that person has no right to ruin my reputation. And then I find, okay, that's it. The reputation, the thought about they have no right to ruin my reputation, or he's ruining my reputation, that thought gets me even more angry. So now I've got the thought that's creating my anger. Do you follow that so far?
Yeah.
Now, in that thought, he's ruining my reputation, that thought contains a goal that's not getting met. And I don't look very far from that thought to find the goal. It's going to have to do with my reputation. And if I have this thought, he's ruining my reputation, the goal that's not getting met is my reputation is in good standing. My reputation is safe. My reputation is building stronger. It's right there. My goal is never going to be far from the thoughts I'm having and the emotion it's creating, and the dynamic that my eyes are showing me are about what's going on in that moment. So when you get up in the morning as an adult in your own house and you're faced with the thought, I want to or I should go use the treadmill, what you're going to use to come up with your goal are only the things that are readily available right there in the moment in front of you as an adult in your own house facing the treadmill and your thoughts about it. You're not going to go back to your childhood for the goal.
So, like, what would be a potential goal there?
It's endless. It's endless. But let's just make sure you get what I'm saying here, that the goal will be derived from the thought you're using to create the negative emotion.
Okay.
And it's going to be fueled by what your eyes can show you and your ears can hear and your physical senses can show you in this moment. Not, you know, at this stage of the game, we're not going back into our past searching for things, trying to figure it out.
Okay, so I wake up and I think I should do the treadmill and I feel anxious about doing the treadmill because I feel I may not be able to make it all the way through 30 minutes. I may want to quit it. It's going to be very uncomfortable. I'd rather do something else.
So you, just right there, stop. You're right on it. So you said, I'm anxious, and I have the thought I may not be able to make it through 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That's a good worksheet right there. You went on to list two or three other thoughts. Those could be separate worksheets. I may want to go do something else, whatever. I may be inadequate, whatever. Those are separate worksheets. Right here, I get up. I think I should do the treadmill. I generate the emotion of anxiety because I pour energy into I may not be able to make it 30 minutes. And that's what you'd put on the worksheet. And right
so
there,
the goal is
going to be derived from that thought that I may not be able to make it 30 minutes. And so your goal is to be able to easily stick to and accomplish the treadmill for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's that easy. It's that direct. It's right here in the present moment.
Okay. So my goal is to make it through 30 minutes.
Yeah, and I would use the word easily.
Easily, yeah.
Because you're generating anxiety with the thought I'm not going to be able to. It's going to be too much. And so the goal has to be basically the opposite of that. That thought that I'm using to generate my negative emotions is always going to contain the goal.
Okay. So I'm with you so far. So my goal is I want to make it easily through 30 minutes.
Yep.
And then when I cancel that goal.
No. You're not going to go to that. Just stay with me. You get a worksheet out. You put in 1A, you put I, Tim, and you read, I, Tim, who am love, I'm experiencing the emotion of anxiety. And then you read how hostility and fear are from internal corrupt data. They indicate my mind's use of what David Bohm calls sustained incoherence, which is a process that doesn't make any sense, but I keep using it anyway. It doesn't lead to resolution, but I keep engaging it anyway. And then I read how my denial causes my mind, my carbon-based memory, to displace my experience of myself as this energy of love and creation and tells me a lie that this anxiety is caused by something or someone outside of me. And then I just put here in 1C, I, you know, am nervous about getting on the treadmill.
Right.
And then in 1D, I write the thought. I'm not going to be able to make it for 30 minutes. I'm not going to be able to easily complete 30 minutes. If you have the thought, I might I might fail at reaching 30 minutes. That would be another worksheet, because that word fail could resonate something else. But you're right there on 1D. My thought is I'm not going to be able to complete 30 minutes. And then you rate how strong your anxiety is in the upper right-hand corner from 0 to 10. How strong would you say your anxiety is here?
When you're 8 or 9.
All right. So you make a note there that your anxiety is at about an 8, and you've written in the anxiety, you've written in your name, you've written in this thought, I'm not going to be able to complete 30 minutes. And when that happens and you have that thought and your anxiety goes up to level 8, what's your punishment thought for yourself?
I'll think of myself as a wimp.
All right, so it's to beat yourself up emotionally, right? To think negative thoughts about yourself.
Right.
And here, because we're not using the thought that I'm a wimp as the core driving the goal, we're not really worried about using the word wimp. We just put, you know, beat myself up emotionally or think negative thoughts about myself, and that's my punishment for myself, right? Self-degradation, that's my punishment thought. Does that make sense?
Okay, yep.
And then we remind ourselves in this worksheet, listen, if I'm in pain, it means my thinking is in error. I read that and I remind myself of that. And then I want to release and surrender myself, my emotions of anxiety. Again, myself as the trigger, my story that I'm not going to be able to complete the treadmill workout. My thought that I'm not going to be able to complete the treadmill workout. My punishment thoughts of beating myself up. I surrender it all to the energy of love. And I breathe into that.
Okay.
And I recommend for people doing the worksheet that they put a check mark and take a breath with each check mark for that little box in the worksheet. And then we go to number 2 where it says, I choose to love truth. With a capital T, I choose to honor truth. I choose truth with a capital T. And I willingly face and process out all of the dis-ease-producing energies for and from all of my relations and all of my generations, which means this could be a big deal. I may not be the first person in my bloodline who worried about being a failure or not being able to complete a task. And then I willingly go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. And I take a breath and put a check mark in that box. And then I figure out what my desire is. What's the goal? And we talked about this earlier. It's going to be directly related to the thought that you've written in space 1D. It's going to be to be able to easily complete. To easily complete the workout.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
You put a check mark in that box?
I was going too far away before in coming up with my goal. So the goal is right within the thought.
That's right. And one of the traps, you know, Michael Rice calls it the primary trap pseudo-solution of the non-being mind. You were trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And then we read in the side, it says, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another story out of all the brain cells firing in my head to hallucinate proof that I'm right and that my fear and hostility-based story, that my reality is true. I cancel that. And I breathe into that. The more I read that and breathe into that, the more power it will have over me over time as I do these worksheets. And then we come back to number four on the worksheet process. It says, I choose love, which is my essence. And when I do, when I focus my conscious awareness on that energy of love, that stirs the loving energy in everyone involved. And I breathe into that, put a check mark in that box. And here's where we ask people to do a little meditation or to shift your energy before you move on. So go ahead and do this if you would. Close your eyes and breathe into some of the most loving, safe, happy, contented, strong thoughts you have, memories about any time in your life, recent or distant past. Breathe into that before we move on.
Okay.
And tell me when you've done that enough to get a shift in the energy rolling in your heart space.
So I focus on a really happy time.
Yep. Any memory during which time you were feeling safe, happy, secure, content, strong, competent, etc.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that.
And are you strengthening that so you've actually got a different energy in your body, in your mind right now than other than that anxiety? Good.
Yes.
Then take a breath, lock that in, and we move into step five. Step five on the worksheet says, when I'm upset, my perception is built out of corrupt data. It's driven by the goal in every worksheet. In this case, it's driven by your goal to be able to easily complete the workout. And this is a limiting picture based on a max of 9 bits of data. When there's 10,000 brain cells firing. Today in our reading from Pam Grout, she says 400 billion bits of information are offered to our senses every second. So this is a very limiting picture. How can I know it's an error? Because I have a negative emotion. So by canceling my goal, that part of my mind that just keeps replicating its own ideas and its own false perceptions, it collapses and it gives me direct contact with whatever's in my brain that's been denied and dissociated. Those parts of my brain blame others and project others, my issues, onto others for its content. So while holding that loving thought, conscious, active, and present, I now choose to collapse my mind's lies by willingly canceling my goal for myself to be able to easily complete the workout. And write that in that square or that line. And take a breath and say it and feel it.
So,
I cancel my goal for myself to be able to easily complete the workout.
I cancel my goal to easily complete the workout.
And then take a breath and we move to 5B. 5B says, I'm going to invite something other than my conscious logical mind . Who do you want to invite? Rukh Dukucha, Holy Spirit, God, Light, Love, your great-grandfather? Who do you want to invite? Okay, Holy Spirit. To incline me toward healing, I invite Holy Spirit to restore me to the awareness of my newborn essence as love, to help me heal my denial and heal my capacity to generate anxiety. And I breathe and put a check mark in each of those boxes. And then I ask Holy Spirit to help me open a direct conscious relationship with and gently remove whatever's been denied and dissociated and is now getting projected into my mind's image of myself or somebody else. And then I want to take a breath and do another little meditation. We've done this before. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes, maybe put your hand over your heart space, and breathe, and silently inside your own mind, repeat what I'm going to say out loud. I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need
cancel
for anyone.
My need
or,
to be right.
But do that silently inside your own mind. Make this a meditation
okay.
for you. Just try and silently follow along with what I'm going to say out loud.
Okay.
I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I put my conscious, logical mind on the shelf for now. I specifically cancel my goal in this worksheet. And I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind that's actually creating my upset. Just breathe and soften. And open yourself to whatever comes up. Trust that any thoughts, any images, any physical sensations that come up are going to contain something you need to see to begin to heal here and move forward. And just gently repeat, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to figure this out. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I specifically cancel my goal in this worksheet to be able to complete that workout easily. I put my conscious logical mind aside for now, and I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind that's actually creating this upset. And then just put yourself in the most open, allowing space you can and breathe and soften, watching whatever comes up, trusting no matter how disjointed it might seem, that whatever comes to your mind is exactly what you need to see here to begin to heal and move forward. And stay with it and breathe and allow and trust that anything that comes to your mind is old stuff. It can't hurt you any more than it already has. And it's perfectly safe for you to see it, feel it, let it wash over you, so you can study it in this little meditation.
Well, what came up for me was a time when I think it when I was in college, and during the summer, our family was staying in another family's house in Washington, D.C., and I felt really awful and depressed and sick. And I wanted sympathy, and my mother didn't want to give me sympathy. And she, well, we ended up fighting over who was going to be the victim. She wanted people to be sorry for her for having to put up with me. And I was upset that she wouldn't attend to me the way I wanted. And it was a very awful, uncomfortable time. And then...
All right. So that's perfect. Let me ask you to stop talking about that and flip this worksheet over or get a blank sheet of paper and make some notes about that.
Okay.
Just make some notes. There's this time in college, and I was very depressed, and I wanted my mother's sympathy and attendance. And my mother wanted to be the victim, and she wanted people to give her sympathy because she had to put up with me or whatever it was. Just all that stuff. Write some details. Write what might seem like innocuous details that come to mind. And as you capture those now, right now as it just happened to you, and you write them down, I just used the word, you capture them so they can't fly away. And it's a very useful thing to do, to take the time at this point of the worksheet to make as many notes as you can about as many of the details as possible. And then let me know when you've got enough down that you know you'll remember this and you can make more detailed notes later, and then we'll move on. You'll want to make notes about sights and sounds and smells and what the weather was like there and who else was around, and all of those things will be useful to help you uncover why you're stuck here.
I wrote down enough to remind me of that.
All right. And so now we want to move on and have you take a breath and scan your body and notice, what do you feel right now? The strongest emotion and or the strongest physical sensation. What do you notice?
I feel a real tightness in my chest.
Okay. So
I want to scream.
So you write that in 6A. I now feel tightness in my chest and I want to scream. And in 6B, you just write what we were just talking about. You just say, see the back of this page. And that's
okay.
And then in 6C, we ask to be shown a time when we have not been able to easily complete our task. And I throw that open to spirit. I say, okay, you know, let's show me other times where there was a simple task that I was worried I couldn't complete it, and how I use that to generate negative emotions and stuckness in me. And then in the draw your feelings box, it says, I commit to love, which is my true nature, and to living a human life. And so to do this, I want to do a mass canceling of all the times I've ever wanted anybody else to be able to easily complete a task. And if some come to mind, you can put their initials there. If nobody comes to mind, you can put your own initials there and breathe into that. I do a mass canceling of all the times I've wanted somebody to easily complete a task. Does it make sense?
Say that again. I'm confused by that.
All right.
Commit to love.
There's a little box. There's a little box on the worksheet that says,
yeah,
"Draw your feelings now" at the bottom, and it says,
yeah,
"I commit to this energy of love, which is my true nature. I commit to living a human life, which is to live my life consciously aware that my true nature is love. So to help achieve this, I'm going to do a mass canceling of all the times I wanted this goal." This number three goal from anybody. Now, we've already canceled my goal for myself to be able to easily complete a task. So now I'm going to go back and say, I'm going to cancel a mass canceling of any time I've wanted anybody else to easily complete a task, whether it was one of my kids, one of my parents, one of my coworkers, one of my employees, one of my bosses. I'm going to do a mass canceling of all the times I've wanted somebody to be able to easily complete their task. And just make that statement. And if all of a sudden you flash on, oh my gosh, I was furious when my mother couldn't, you know, in this thing that you just outlined when you were in college. My task for my mother was for her to support me in my depression. And I was furious that she couldn't just easily do that. That would be one of the times I'm canceling here.
Yeah.
And I'm not making it a whole worksheet right now. I can do a whole worksheet later, but that's just one of the times I'm canceling the goal I had for somebody to easily complete a task.
Okay.
And then number 7 says, the principle of the universe is that by giving, I first get the original. So I'm going to choose to be grateful for this opportunity to heal. I'm going to choose, capital T truth, to pay attention to what actually is in life rather than the distorted perception that my senses are showing me. And I'm going to choose, capital T truth, and I'm going to choose perfect love. And I'm going to structure a loving goal for myself based on this worksheet. What would that be? Remember how we talk about we want to make these specific and time limited.
So since I want to get on the treadmill and do the best I can.
Okay, but that's this. You can do that again in this worksheet. But you just uncovered that all of the worry and the anxiety and the sick feeling you have in this worksheet when you approach the treadmill is energetically connected to memories you have about times when you were depressed in college and your mother wanted to be the one who got all the attention, not you. And you had that tightness in your chest and you wanted to scream. So I would recommend you do a worksheet on that memory.
Okay.
Or several worksheets on that memory to clear out some of that traumatic energy that you downloaded when you were in college and you said that was such a horrible situation. So do one or two worksheets on the memory that you wrote about on the back of this worksheet.
Okay.
The trauma around college. Got it? And then you can do that before you go to bed tonight, or you can do that tomorrow before you go to bed, and then you'll know when you're done with it. And that way you're not going to be creating unnecessary, unresolvable stress by setting a goal that you don't accomplish. And if you set that goal to do one or two worksheets on that memory before you go to bed tonight, and it's time to go to bed tonight and you haven't done those worksheets, please consciously say, I cancel my goal to do those worksheets, and I ask to be shown how to have a restful night's sleep. At a minimum, do that. Cancel the goal if it's time to go to bed tonight and you haven't done those worksheets so that you don't.
So is the goal, is the enlightened goal to do the worksheets today, one or two worksheets on that time, and
that's it. That's your enlightened
goal. My mother
goal.
Wanted to be the victim. Is that my enlightened goal?
That's it. Because that will help you unload some more of that negative energy, negative self-judgment, traumatic energy, and make it easier for you to see and feel the truth of your nature as love.
But I thought at the end of a worksheet you're supposed to feel, one is supposed to feel a new sense of strength and invigorated.
No, that's an error. That's an error in your thought.
Oh.
There is no supposed to at the end of a worksheet. There is just whatever happens. And I'm willing to feel the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing, which might be stomach cramps, headaches, fatigue, depression, any negative thought I've ever had, and fatigue, any negative emotion I've ever had, and depression, any physical symptom I've ever had, I'm willing to feel that at the end of this worksheet. There's no supposed to.
Okay.
So if you take a breath right now and scan your body and notice how you're feeling, what level of tension or upset would you say you're feeling right now?
A 2.
All right. I would put that in the upset level, and I would count that a fairly successful worksheet if I were you, if I'd gone from an 8 or a 9 down to a level 2.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to do too much with the worksheet, and I wasn't staying with a specific event that caused the anxiety.
Yes. Yes, and remember what we said in the beginning was your primary error was you began by trying to figure it out rather than just doing the worksheet process and trusting the process.
So how does the process work? Where is the... How does it help me to do the worksheet?
You'll see that over time. Right now, one of the benefits is that instead of thinking it's all about something way back in your childhood that you were trying to figure out, or thinking that it's all about my upset with this me and this treadmill today, you just made another connection between the anxiety that you generate with the treadmill routine in the morning and a very unpleasant, some would say traumatic memory you had in your college years with your mother.
Yeah.
And as you do the work to dismantle more of that, then it'll uncover, if you're like most of us, it'll uncover other worksheets that you can do. And eventually, as you do those worksheets, your life will get better. You'll have less anxieties, you'll have less fears, less angers, less hurts, because you're doing the dismantling process that in Aramaic was called forgiveness, or shebag, which later got translated into the word forgiveness.
Oh, so I don't have to figure it out. That's
yeah, we highly advise against that. As a matter of fact, Michael Rice calls that the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, of the mind trapped in pain and fear. The number one thing my mind does that when it's trapped in pain and fear, or what it does to get there, is it tries to figure it out. So we're down to our last minute. I need to make the transition, so I will thank you for the call and remind you that this will be available in the archives after Michael and Jeannie's hour, and you can go back and listen again and take notes if you need to. And I greatly appreciate your willingness to call and work through the worksheet. So thank you. All right. You're entirely welcome and deserving. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. It's a good conversation, and it looks like Lisa's comments about anxiety in the chat room fit right along with your conversation with Tim Bingham. So that's awesome.
And maybe Michael can address that question that she's got about explain why it's a feeling. So blessings.
Okay.
Have a great show.
Thank you. Have a good Friday and a nice Easter. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Good Friday, Friday, April the 2nd, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. I will direct everybody to our website, as I usually do, whyagain.org. Click on the bullseye or the Start Here button. They both will take you to where you'll find all the worksheets and lots of audios and videos and things. There's one link that says special shows, special MP3s of radio shows. A lot of them are where we've walked somebody through doing a worksheet. Some of them are just very detailed explanations of different aspects of the work, and so we put them out there. And someone had requested that I put out the piece of the show where Michael and I discussed our four-day sabbatical. So it's now out there under the special MP3s as well. And I'll also say, if you haven't been to the website, we now have all of the DVDs converted into MP4s. Thank you, Darren, for doing that for us. And so they're half price. They're $20 each instead of $40 each for the two-hour ones. And it's download. It's not, you can't download it, but you use the link that I would send you, and then you can watch it, stream it online, however often, forever that you want. But that way, and it's got a better quality, and it just seems to work a whole lot better. So if you go to the buy products, you'll see another link that says MP4 videos, and you can click on that. Welcome, Michael, and we do already have a question on the floor, so I'll welcome you first.
Excited to be here, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're honored that you're going to participate in this conversation, and let's go with what's on the floor.
Okay. Well, Dr. Tim had been talking with Tim Bingham about his anxiety over some different things, and so I thought that the question in the chat room had also been addressed, but Tim said that it hadn't, so perhaps you would address it. So they were speaking of anxiety, and Lisa in the chat room says that she had always classified anxiety as a thought, and to explain the difference why it would be a feeling. And then she responded again and said, it's unease that I feel overall, and I'm using the thought to drive anxiety. And then she said she's got it. So she picked that up from what Tim had said to Tim Bingham, I guess. But if you would like to add to that.
Nice catch. Well, you know, there are many different thought disorders that can produce any given feeling. And we have, you know, categories of words that we say are feelings, which are reflections of thoughts. And so the idea is to allow yourself to really start to decode, to look at the subtle energies in your mind. And especially if there are things that you've habitually, you know, you come from a family system or culture that habitually denies and therefore dissociates from it, coming back into relationship and being conscious of what's the thought that I'm creating this with. And then, of course, when I throw that thought out, I can be free of whatever the feeling is that it reflects. My take is that mechanically, when we think a thought, we know that that thought becomes a molecule, a neuropeptide in the structure. And when it lands on the cell, the cell is designed to tell us the quality of the thought that entered. So if I put in the thought that is joyful, you know, that reflects as joy, when it hits the cell, I go, oh, this feels so good. It literally creates, quote unquote, the chemistry that we call joy. And if I put in a thought that doesn't belong in the system, is of a disintegrative nature, then the cell's going to shout out with, oh, no, not this again. I don't want to deal with this feeling, this reflection of the thought. And so the idea is to change your thinking, to move in a different direction. Sometimes people say, well, but look at what just happened. Of course I would think that way. Well, no, actually, if you think in a way that creates disintegrative energy within you in a situation, you literally debilitate yourself in you know, the way you can, the resources that you have. You shut resources down that can help you to deal with that situation. So when you get things on track with your thinking, then you get things on track with the feelings that either enhance mental, emotional, cellular, physiological function, or feelings that detract from all of those things. So we're working to get them back on track.
Awesome.
I hope that makes sense and fits.
And we had a hand just go up.
Great. Let's say hello.
It's 314. Excuse me, 314. I think that's Doug.
Yes, it is. Hello, Michael.
Hey, young man. How are things there? And we've been thinking about you and Floody and wondering how it's going there.
It's okay so far.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the process of doing a worksheet, and before I dive into this, I just wonder if you have any thoughts or advice. One of the things that's hard for me to do on the radio show that I do anyway is to, like, I feel like I'm putting my dysfunction out into the world for the rest of my life in the global domain when I engage on this show. And what I'm looking for is a thought or an idea that you might have that would support me in being able to do that more easily, because I'm going to do this, I think, anyway. But that's a challenge and an obstacle for me. You know, I think, well, yeah, what about, you know, what's happening in 5 or 10 years from my life? And, you know, I think, well, you know, yeah. How's that going to be? But do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, part of me, like, well, if it helps people to grow, great. But any thoughts that would make that easier?
Would you lay out the dilemma once again, Doug? I'm not sure I got it.
I feel like when I get on the show, which I love to do for help and support and to help others as well, and I lay out my dysfunction as a human being,
right,
the issues I have in my life, the craziness that's mm-hmm. going on for me, I know that I'm putting it in front of the world on the internet for the rest of my life.
Right.
And
yep.
I have reluctance to do that. And I'm wondering if you have any on how I might, maybe there's a subject for another worksheet, but overcome my resistance to doing that.
Well, you know, I would go a slightly different direction with it. I've asked myself the question, is this something that's coming from hostility and fear? If so, then
clearly,
I dismantle pardon me?
Clearly from fear. You know, it's like,
okay.
I think, what would it be like for a politician, you know, to, you know, somebody, or what if I become somebody of some notoriety and everybody's going to research this and bring up everything that ever happened in my life, and, you know, the woke culture and things, the way people are about anything, that it's like, I don't want this weaponized against me at some point in my future.
Right. Right. Then I, of course, would clean up my fear about things being weaponized against me and look at how I weaponize things against myself and or other people. And so I'd clean that fear out. But there was a second place that I was going to go with that. First, if it's coming from fear, then I do my work around it and then check in again and see what's appropriate. And or if it's coming from guidance, you know, this is not an appropriate thing for me to do or bring up, then I'd follow my guidance and not do it, not bring it up.
Okay.
And for me, you know, if I were, you know, of course, I exposed a lot of things about me that somebody could weaponize. And my take is, you know, if I became that person of notoriety in the future or what have you, I'd say, yeah. And here we are, being honest human beings, creating a space for healing and support for real, true healing. And by the way, you know, the way you're putting barbs into this, what's going on in your world that you would do that? And, you know, maybe you could become the politician of note that opens up a whole different dialogue in the culture and puts an end to that silliness that people do in the political world. Bring truth and honesty to it. So, there's, you know, there are both sides of the coin.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah, I found that I constricted on the guidance part, like, well, is this my guidance? And then, but this, what you're saying now is exactly what I'm looking for, actually something to open me up. But yeah, okay, those are all good thoughts. I like those. So let me move into my issue. Okay, so as the show was opening, I realized that I just had a great deal of feelings of stuck and sadness and a lot of emotion. And I was like, okay, so I started a worksheet and I know that by doing this, something will happen that will be helpful for me. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but that's my goal, of course, is to do the forgiveness process that will liberate me from my painful realities. And so, the object of my attention, I'm just going to, unless you guide me somewhere else, I'm going to just read a little about what I have down so far.
Go for it.
The object of my attention is Diane. I am being blocked from loving and expressing love to Diane. My thoughts are, I am isolated and blocked, thus lost, from being in loving expression with Diane and joy. My punishment
Let's just go that far right now for a second.
Great.
So the way I hear you reading what you're reading, it sounds like, and it might not be, but it sounds like denial. And the reason I say that is it sounds like, you know, as I listen to those words, well, there's something out there. I am being blocked. Like, I have nothing to do with this. I'm not blocking love, but I am being blocked. Like, you know, and I'd offer that's the epitome of denial. If you're not expressing, experiencing, projecting, sending, extending, expanding love, it's because you're not doing those things. It's not because you're being blocked. Nothing can block you from doing that. I mean, not even if Diane canceled the thought, stood up with an axe and said, don't you come near me with that love, would you be blocked from doing love? Excuse me, Diane, if you're listening.
That's powerful already. It's like, okay, here's the value. I wouldn't have had those awarenesses. So to express
so
why I feel that way.
Into, yeah, perhaps shifting into responsibility language. Here I find myself once again blocking the presence of love in me. I'm blocking myself from experiencing myself as being love. And I'm really ready to be shown why I do that and what that's about and to have those blocks forgiven.
Michael, but would that not
yes,
be
Wendy,
if he was the, would that not be if Doug were the object of attention? He's doing this with Diane being the object of attention.
Well, but if Doug is blocking love, it really doesn't matter what the object of attention is. Doug is blocking love. The salient point from the get-go for me right now is that thing out of the thought that I am being blocked, like something is blocking me to, I'm the one who's doing the blocking. I'm preventing myself from experiencing myself as love and extending that love. And so whether the object of attention is Diane or myself or, you know, Billy the dog, you know, if I'm blocking, then I want to look at why I'm blocking and what do I need to do to unblock that presence in me? Does that make sense for your thought, Dean?
Yeah, it does. But I guess what I'm thinking is when someone's usually doing a worksheet, the whole part, number one, A, B, C, D, E, or whatever, is all denial anyway, because that's the part where we're saying this is what happened and this is what I think and this is what I feel. So I don't know.
Well, the difference being moving from projection language to responsibility language. If I start to language accurately, if I language I am being blocked, I've given a message to my mind. Mind developed for me a perceptual construct that shows me that something's blocking me. I am being blocked. Something outside of me is causing me to be blocked. When I shift into just the simple responsibility to, I realize that I'm blocking myself from experiencing or expressing the love that I am. then I've given my mind to start to show me different, given my mind permission to start to show me a more accurate construct of what's really going on. Does that make sense?
Are you asking me or Jeannie?
Yes.
I defer to you. Go ahead, Doug. Do your worksheet.
I find value in what Jeannie's offering and value
yeah.
what you're saying, Michael. It's like this is kind of taking the worksheet in a different direction, you know, than I was going. But there's huge value in it, and immediately it's like I see that this, you know, it's like I wrote down I am blocking myself from experiencing myself as the beingness of love. Well, that would immediately supplant. I started breathing on that immediately. It's like immediately when you said that, I was like, oh my God, you know, that's what I really want. You know, what I put down as my goal in my worksheet is to be the flow of loving expression experiences with Diane, you know, which is a different goal. Like I could replace
yeah.
that goal with this goal, and that might be a different worksheet or whatever, or it could just be a change in this worksheet. But what I recognize is that's what I truly want is, you know, it's like this. Maybe my denial is that I think I have to do this with Diane, and then I think that she's somehow keeping me from doing it. You know, which is your point, that she's
yeah.
not, can't stop me from being
a person. No. But your mind, like all of us, can come up with all kinds of excuses and reasons why, whatever, you know, I should block love or, you know, I mean, it can be a thousand reasons. And, of course, the idea of the worksheet is to get to the root of what's the active underlying thought disorder that has me blocking love, and am I willing to forgive that, remove that?
Right, and I want to do that. And I feel like there's, you know, this takes me in the direction of not loving myself or not believing I'm worthy or not believing I'm worthy to love, whereas the other direction was taking me into, you know, that I'm isolated here in Missouri. Diane doesn't really want me up there. She's the one woman I'm focusing on. You know, there's no other woman that is authorized for me to express my love as towards or with. You know, I feel sequestered and isolated, and I'm just sort of summarizing some of my, where did the expanded 1D. And I'm in pain without meaningful existence if I'm not engaged in loving interchange directly with my love. You know, all else is meaningless. She's the most important person in my life and so on. And I therefore feel lost without purpose. I'm not motivated to do anything else. Nor does anything else hold reward or motivation. And hence why live my relationship is in jeopardy. And then I wrote, Diane says I'm too dependent upon her. And this is, you know, this is sure looks dependent. I said, my meaning, peace, joy come from my interacting with her. And so how can I create inside, outside meaning, purpose, joy in my life? And that what you suggest is really the answer to that. I mean, it opens the gate to that. I mean, I also wrote the whole world is especially my beloved constitutional republic, is in an insane downward spiral. I just want to be with Diane in loving interactions and exchange. What other purpose, of course, you know, and so I just, yeah, that's laid it all out there. And I'm saying that I'm hearing from you that getting out of denial about this is the answer to all those questions I was just writing. You know, it's like if I can just recognize that I can love and be love and express love, and nobody's stopping me from it, nobody's blocking me from it, you know.
Exactly. And you just outlined your 77 times 70 worksheets. You know, go back and re-listen to this last 5 minutes and take each of those thoughts, and there's another piece of the puzzle of the complex of thoughts with which you block yourself from experiencing yourself as who you are. Your created essence is love. And you've just reflected the carbon-based memory content that comes up powerfully enough to draw your awareness from who you are as created love into identification with everything from, you know, someone else blocking you and the world or the circumstances in the country. And so each of those for me would be a different worksheet. It's a different goal involved. When I canceled that goal and let this construct that blocks or that, let me say it differently, that screams loudly enough in my mind that I go, oh, that's me, that's what's doing it, that I fall into identification with that, you know, self. You know, you go back to Yeshua and he says, in order for you, being, to live, you, non-being, has to die. And you just outlined a bunch of thoughts that non-being holds to keep you enamored with its BS. And as you forgive each of those, you'll weaken those frequency patterns, those energetic patterns from brain cells until they shut up. And then what's left? Just Doug. Just the presence of being. And so in that space, as you deeply incarnate in your physiology as love and realize that that's the truth about you, then what can block that but another thought disorder that needs to be forgiven? And the behaviors of others in the world don't create our thought disorders. We can play the pretense that when that thought disorder becomes active, I build my brain's image of them out of it, and therefore it's they who are doing it to me. But the truth is, it's all an inside job. It's all a reflection of what I'm doing, what my carbon-based memory is doing. And each time you forgive and get back, nice breath, and touch into that state of being, then what do I need to do to maintain this state of connectedness and being? And carbon-based memory is going to come up and shout and scream and give you all the excuses it has. You know, I shouldn't be loving toward them because look what they just said. Look what they just did. They didn't obey me. They, you know, whatever, 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 whatever.
Yeah,
and of course, I join with you and recognize that I'm describing my own process. You know, all of us are in this boat together.
Right. Yeah, all of our human condition. Non-beingness.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons for creating distance, you know, I make sure my relationships on the other side of the country or in a city far away where I can only go occasionally, is then I don't get into the intensity of what I really need to deal with. And when I find someone who says the right words to resonate the intensity of what I really need to deal with, I'm going to shut them up in a hurry and change them, or I'm getting out of Dodge. I will escape from communication, have nothing to do with them, because they give me too many opportunities to learn forgiveness, and I don't want to go there.
Well, that would be
and I've got a whole story that I can successfully tell about why I'm leaving them, because it's them and what they said and what they did. I mean, what they said may have been, you know, one sentence out of a million sentences they've spoken to me, but boy, that one gives me the good excuse to kick them out of my life. And, you know, confronting ourselves is not easy. Say again?
What you're describing now, I think, would be applicable to both Diane and I. You know, it's like in my current experience is that I'm being kicked out of her life or held at arm's length from her. I mean, I have a huge reality that she's distancing from me for the last 3 years, you know. And yet I've also been coarse, you know, feeling like I got to get out of here, or leave, or distance, or, you know, something. But it's painful to be, it's immense pain comes up when we are put into a position where
notice we're slipping back into denial again. When you're put in a position.
When I put myself in a
relationship. How about
in a relationship.
When I volunteer to go into this position? I'm going to show you a whole different process. Because you notice you've been through that in that position 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time you were put in that position. Who put you there? Hint.
Yeah,
not
it's voluntary.
Them. Yeah. And how do I volunteer for that position? My automatic decision system kicks in with the unresolved thought disorders.
Right. Yes, it does. Yeah. And that happens in my partner as well, you know, and then we're both immersed in that content coming forward.
How cool to find somebody with a matching bag of garbage. You'd almost think that the creator created the world so that people with matching bags of garbage would be resonated into each other's space and give each other all the opportunities they need to heal. You'd think it was the design of the world. I think there's a conspiracy. You know, they talk about conspiracy theories today in America. I think that's the number one conspiracy. God wants each of us to heal and therefore designed the universe to give us every opportunity that we need. And, of course, as we know, healing, facing what's inside, isn't Dr. Feelgood.
No.
In fact, I bet, you know, the reading I was going to do today is from Chapter 9 in my book. And there are actually some pictures with a dialogue. And I bet that's what's up for reading today. And I bet if I reach for the book right now and read it. Now, I wrote this dialogue 25, 26 years ago between these two people. And you know what? I bet I'm quoting you if I were to read it right now.
Okay, I guess matter.
Say again.
I guess that's what's next. If you want.
It's a bitch how predictable it is. Let me tell you.
Well, I've noticed that.
So let's go for it.
Somebody's orchestrating things.
Oh, dear. So I'm going to go to page 50 in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And if you don't have it, you can go to, you know, we spread several tens of thousands of copies around the globe back 25 years ago when they're still available on Amazon, even though the book's out of print. You can pick it up for a couple of bucks on Amazon or eBay, and or you can go to our website and download it free. But anyway, so we're talking about, oh my goodness, the topic of this chapter is blockage of truth. Now, how do we get to this? That's probably not relative here, is it, Doug?
No.
So what I have on the page are 1, 2, 3, 4 sets of diagrams. And in the first diagram, we have a man who's called Macho Man. And so I'm going to read the little bubbles that are his voice and her voice. She's nice woman and he's Macho Man.
Okay.
And so here's the dialogue between their matching bags of garbage. And you'll see that if you were to look at the book, you'll see we've got a spiral built in that shows either the downward direction or the upward direction that's possible. And then you'll see that each is triggering the other. So here's the Macho Man act, who is suppressing his feelings. And we identify, if we look in, you know, I've got like stick figures, if we look in his head, his disease is fear. And then we look at her, you know, we've got a stick figure of her, and if I look inside of her head, it's the nice woman act, and she's suppressing her true feelings, and her disease is anger. And so he says, just leave me alone. She says, why can't you just do it the way I tell you? He says, you make me angry. And she says, I'm sorry. And then underlying in the unconscious, we show Macho Man saying to himself, women always just put me down. And nice woman in her unconscious is saying, men are no good. So that describes the first frame. Next level of the conversation, Macho Man says, it's all your fault. Nice woman says, I can't do anything right. And then we look at what's happening in Macho Man's head, unconscious, and he says, or pardon me, he, what's going on in his unconscious is, I must keep my fear hidden. Need to stay in control. Nice woman, inside of her unconscious, what she's saying is, must keep my anger hidden. Need to stay in control. Imagine that each one of them wants to stay in control. How shocking. And then, so what's he saying to himself in this second frame, in this case of it's all your fault, and she's saying, can't I do anything right? He's saying, I have to get out of here. And she's saying, men always leave. The fourth frame, act four in the conversation. Macho Man says, it's okay. I'll let you off the hook. I'll forgive you. And nice woman says, I forgive you for all the pain you've caused me. Oh, good. Maybe things will work out this time. And then what we see happening in the, you know, the unconscious, the inside of the stick man head drawing for Macho Man, is he says, or we're informing him, this form of forgiveness maintains the need for his act and reinforces his quote-unquote superiority, which keeps his reality of fear in place and hidden. And her response is, or unconscious, what we're showing in the diagram, the stick figure in her head, what's going on is forgiving, of course, in quotes, and being forgiven, again, in quotes, without a change is what's happening. Without a change in the internal reality structure means that she will set, quote-unquote, it up again. Being nice keeps her true feelings hidden and keeps her from looking at what she needs to heal. So the unconscious thought in this third frame is, she'll destroy me if I don't get out. And the unconscious thought that's going on for her, she talks about forgiving him and maybe it'll work out this time, is, fat chance. I will never be loved. I could just kill him. Then we go on to frame four. Are you breathing, Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Is everybody else that's listening breathing? Good. Awesome. So, and just remember that everything that we're talking about that's going on for both of them at the unconscious level is turned into a picture world that makes it logical to believe that this is all being caused by this other person out there on both sides of this equation. That's how projection works. When, you know, remembering that this carbon-based memory is filled with digital information, thoughts, and those thoughts, when activated, literally turn into a construct, a picture in the mind of what I think I see in the world, and never realizes what I'm seeing that's a reflection of the content of my own thought structure, the content of my own mind. And then, so the fourth frame, Macho Man says, "You are so messed up. I'm out of here." Nice Woman says, "Why are you leaving? What's wrong with me?" And then inside of Macho Man's head is a description of what's going on for him. Terrified to look at what's really going on inside. And now fear becomes terror. Inside of Nice Woman's head, terrified to look at what's really going on inside, anger becomes rage. And then Macho Man's unconscious thought is, "I want another drink." Nice Woman's unconscious thought is, "I want to eat. One of these days I'll speak up." So there's the kind of matching bags of garbage that allow people, they in blockage of truth, of recognizing that here I am in my perceptual construct bouncing up against someone else, and I believe that this construct in my mind is true about her, and she believes that the construct in her mind is true about me. And the truth is, my perceptual construct is true about me first, and her perceptual construct is true about her. But as long as we keep speaking in the language of dissociation, that is denial, "You made me," then the mind just perpetuates that kind of BS.
Yeah.
Resonate anything for you?
Well, I think what I feel mostly is it brings up pain and compassion. I just feel like when you look at the unconscious thoughts that are going on in that dialogue, and you stand outside of it and think, well, how could they possibly be, you know, having any success? I mean, obviously, as long as that's what's going on in them,
just flip back here to one of the opening pages in the book, and this is on Roman numeral XX. And here's, for me, you know, and I wrote this again 25, 27 years ago, the challenge is, if we don't have tools, here's where we live. So if you remember the page that lays out, life without tools is sleep and hell. Information without tools is impotence. Power without tools is dictatorship. Relationship without tools is codependence. Knowledge without tools is dangerous. Commitment without tools is hopeless. Abundance without tools is loss. Health without tools is impossible. Learning without tools is chaos. Ambition without tools is corruption. A world without tools is war. Having tools and not using them is a world without tools. And unless we're constantly applying the tools to this non-being mind, which, you know, you and I came in on the scene very late in the game. Like, how many generations could each of us, if we got into our ancestry, trace back and look at, you know, how many of those ancestors died in war, died of horrible diseases, divorced, murdered, abused, drank? I mean, how much of that could we each look at in our bloodline and recognize that most of us came on the scene into a pretty unconscious world and a pretty unconscious family system? I think about one friend I had who was a minister. and bragged about how his father was in the ministry and his father's father was in the ministry. And he was one of the most conflicted, relationship-depressed, destructive toward his relationship and drank like a fish person I'd ever known. So, you know, it was the story about how, yeah, look, we came into this conscious and you know, but it was life without tools. Now, what's the alternative if we choose to step into it? Life with tools is awakening into light. Information with tools is power. Power with tools becomes service. Relationship with tools is interdependence. Knowledge with tools is safety. Commitment with tools is a blessing. Abundance with tools is easy. Health with tools is natural. Learning with tools is education. Ambition with tools is accomplishment. A world with tools is peaceful. Having tools and using them leads to aliveness. But there's the key. Is the tools have to be consistently, persistently used. And it takes a community. That's one of the reasons we do this radio show, so that this community is available, whether somebody's in some isolated, you know, little village in the middle of, you know, Russia, or whether it's, you know, downtown Detroit. That there's a community of people that we can keep bouncing off of, because this multi-generational database called the Body Mind Unit, literally for each of us, has 1,000 generations of these stories. I mean, what was that, Dragnet? There are 1,000,000 stories in the Naked City. And those stories, when the mind turns them into pictures and we actually think we see it, I mean, it really is out there. Look, I see it. I'm describing it to you. And when I don't have a clue that what I'm describing is a construct in my own mind that comes from my unresolved content. And it's so easy to, you know, you get a deep taste of living as the presence of love. And then that old carbon-based memory comes in with one of its projections. And it's so easy to slip back in and forget that, oh, I could have my physiology filled with the most exquisite, delightful, sweetest presence of love that ever existed. But my thought disorders lead me to kick that out, to literally exclude that and go back to what has been locked in bone within my structure. And it takes constant, conscious, consistent, persistent effort to dismantle that inertia-bound perceptual system whose direction was set long before I was even a twinkle in my father's eye. That's why if we go back to Yeshua, and this situation was no different 2,000 years ago, let's go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago and we hear him saying to he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of, they will become a pillar in the temple of the Creator. That's the body, and shall go out no more. That's a pretty big promise when, you know, everybody in the culture is dying and 100 years or less, and if they make it to 100, they think they've lived a really long life. That's a pretty big promise. Shall go out no more, shall become a pillar in the temple. And that, to me, gives us a look at why one community is so important and support, why we're having this conversation, because, of course, this conversation isn't just for you, it's for me, it's for everybody that's listening. Because this inertia-bound, multi-generational database will keep telling its story till the cows come home, until we get to the root of what needs to be removed. And then, you know, it's kind of like pulling a tooth that really doesn't want to come out. It takes serious, sincere, committed work. So I breathe with you. And everybody else is listening that this is touching right now.
Right.
So what's your highest spot, Doug?
Well, my highest thought, of course, is I want that which you just quoted Christ saying, and that's been an ambition for some time, and more immediately, the experience of being immersed in the presence and awareness of love.
Yeah.
And I think what you wrote there about tools with and without is fabulous. And I asked for clarification or confirmation, really, of what I heard you say, the interpretation of those words being that the temple, I think it was right at the end, something about will be a pillar in the temple.
Will become a pillar in the temple. Yeah.
That temple meaning the physical body, right? In that particular.
Yeah. This is the temple, and a pillar is a fixture, you know. You look at the columns on the Colosseum. You know, the Colosseum's gone. The pillars are still there. I mean, literally, if you've gone to Rome, the Colosseum, you know, it's pretty much wiped out. But maybe those pillars are standing. They were something solid that would last forever. And what I hear him saying is, I have laid out a body of work for you to do, and when people really come close and confront it, when I tell them what it really means, they say, you know, here's a case where that actually happened, and half, literally half of his disciples left saying, too hard a saying, too hard. That's what they said, and they left. They never came back. And then they went off and made up a theology about how all you have to do is call on this magic name. Oh, no, there's no work to do. In fact, you can't even do anything. So you just call on this name, and then everything will be okay. But if you go look at the community of folks that are stuck in that theology, there's a lot of pain and suffering and a lot of sexual abuse, a lot of child abuse, a lot of spousal abuse, a lot of alcohol abuse. The man gave us a body of work to do. Those who didn't want to do it turned it into a belief system and a dogma. And, you know, and if you listen to many of them, you think that the dogma is the only thing. We have the right dogma. Like, there are 3,200 sects of so-called Christianity, and each one of them has a dogma. And the man never even said, here's the dogma you want. He said, I have a purpose. I come to bring you life. What is life? Life is love flowing through a cell. And our generations have learned how to inhibit that life flowing through a cell and make up a whole picture world, a whole projection about the only reason I'm not experiencing life is because of what you did. And most everybody in the world is standing there with the finger pointed at somebody else who did it to them. And they've got a whole story. And their story is so convincing because they actually literally see it. Like, they think with their eyes. They don't know that it's just a construct of their brain. But they see it. So it must be true because I see it. It's such a convincing lie. That's a big piece of work to do to overcome that inertia-bound, multi-generational database that constructs pictures of everybody else being the problem. And, of course, we tend to be stuck in the serial game of, well, yesterday it was that person, but I got rid of them, so they're no longer the problem. But now it's this person. Well, wait a minute. Let me get rid of them. Now, there, I got rid of the problem. Now, oh! Another one, it's their problem. See, it's their fault. That's why I'm experiencing this. It's like, no, the reason you're experiencing this is because you haven't dealt with this yet. And your mind is a liar. In fact, it's the father of liars. Yeshua said there is no truth in him. If the father, that is the sire, the initiator of your experience, is your carbon-based memory system, there is no truth in it. And if you let that run your life, then you, like, absolutely, predictably, 100% get to live the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? or as some people have titled it, Michael, I understand you wrote a book called Why Are They Doing This to Me Again?
Yeah, the quote that you gave for Christ, was it after that they left saying this thing was too hard? I've heard you say this before. It seems like
it's actually in Revelations that the quote comes for to he that where he says to he that overcomes he shall become a pillar. But it's
okay.
a different situations where there are a number of disciples and they say to Yeshua, you know, well, what in essence what they say is, well, what do we need to do to please God? And he gives them an answer. He uses an Aramaic metaphor that has been totally misinterpreted, but he says to them, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. And the Greeks, of course, have made that up to be communion, but why if they said, what do we need to do to please God? And he said, well, you just go to communion. Why would anybody say that's too hard a saying? Obviously, it didn't mean anything about going to communion. Because that's a pretty easy saying. I mean, gee, you get to do that just about any Sunday on a million street corners in America in 32,000 different sects of Christianity. That's obviously not a hard saying. Actually, that makes it pretty easy. But if you look behind that, the meaning of those words in Aramaic is basically, you got to do your work. You've got to show up in your body as the active presence of love, as I'm doing. You know, it's an idiom. The example I like to use that idiom that makes it, I think, a little clearer is let's imagine that I am a maker of cabinets. I make the finest cabinets. I'm acknowledged as the finest cabinet maker in the world. And Doug comes to me and says, Michael, I want to learn to make cabinets like you. If I were Aramaic, and you know, it's still a live language with a live metaphor, it's still used. If I were Aramaic, I would say to you, Doug, well, then you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. And that wouldn't mean you have to go to communion. What that would mean is, okay, Doug, so you want to learn to make cabinets like I am. You're going to have to learn everything that I know about wood. You're going to have to learn everything I know about the grains of wood and how to cut wood. You're going to have to know everything I know about finishes and mixing different chemicals to make the finishes. And you're going to have to know what I know about doweling and how to set a dowel and how to make sure a corner fits perfectly. And you're going to have to know everything about finishing these woods and getting this type of sheen and that kind of stain. And I mean, you're going to have to eat my body and drink my blood. When he said that to them, you know, here's a guy who's showing up, no matter what people do, is the active presence of love. And they're used to raging at their spouses and hating their neighbor and fighting with and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And in essence, he's saying, you're going to have to give all that up and show up as the active presence of love in order to experience the active presence of love. And they said, too hard a saying. And I can just imagine, you know, Oeyvind, as he walked away from this guy saying too hard a saying, he's like, what the heck? I got this good thing going. I've got this businessman on the other side of town conned into thinking that he needs to pay me this much for this product. And man, I'm making 10 times as much as I should be. He's telling me I have to get honest and give up all that extra profit. Too hard a saying. I'm out of here. You know, and AB says, you know, that wife of my neighbor, you know, when he's off doing, you know, his work every other Thursday, we get to play a little footsie. He's telling me I have to give up that. Too hard a saying. I'm out. And literally half of the disciples left at that point and never came back. Too hard a saying. Well, obviously communion isn't a big deal. No hard saying there. So he must have meant something else. And actually, there are two different words that the Greeks use in the context of that particular passage. And one of them, when he says, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood, he uses a word that would be much like sitting down to dine, like you're going to just sit down and eat something. But then when they kind of go into resistance to it, he repeats it. And I don't know whether this is accurate in the Aramaic or not, but you can do some research and see it in the Greek. And the second time, and they really objected when he got to this, because he used a different word. It wasn't just sitting down to eat. It was like he used a word that would be more like describing an animal chewing and gnawing on a bone. And they're like disgusted. Ooh, gnawing on a bone. Like, you know. And notice, you know, when you and I, or I and anybody else that calls in, get into these principles, what are we doing? We're really gnawing, really, you know, revisiting and reworking and moving to build new brain cells and new understanding, really gnawing on these principles until finally the mind goes, oh, I got it, okay. And that's what it takes. And most people are like, well, no, I want to go out and make money. I want to go out and have fun. I want to go out and, you know, have a steak dinner and a bottle of scotch. You want me to stay home and study and gnaw and do my work? Half of the disciples walked away and never came back. And the ones that stayed still weren't getting it. You look at that at the point, you know, right at kind of the pinnacle of Yeshua's demonstration, and he's getting ready, you know, to meet the high priest servant who's going to have him mercilessly slaughtered. And here's Peter, like, you know, he's proclaimed as the head dude. And you notice what he calls Peter in that context. He literally turns to Peter and calls him Satan. You know, Peter's going to step in, and he's going to stop the high priest servant from slaughtering Yeshua. And Yeshua turned, you know, people think, well, the fathers, they got it. Peter didn't get it. Yeshua never would have literally referred to him as Satan. Now, remember that Satan in Aramaic means the resister, one who misleads, but he turns to Peter when Peter wants to stop that, and he defines what he means by Satan. He says, Pete, you want to stop this because you are in the mind of man. You're in your perceptual constructs rather than the plan of God. There's a bigger picture here, and you can't see it out of your little 9-bit mind. So there's a work to be done, and here we are, down to the last minute of the show. You got another thought?
Just thank you. Awesome. Right on. Lots to gnaw on there.
lots to gnaw on, isn't there? Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The original Incredible Joining.
What was that?
The original Incredible Joining. J-O-Y.
Joy.
Journey.
What, the original?
The light. A joyful opportunity to open and heal.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's
all right.
Purpose.
Well, the show's going to cut us off in just a few seconds, so I'm going to say to everybody, thank you for the listening ears and the speaking, and create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org. www.whyagain.org.